get it is a public meeting. So it read what they had to say and why, and how important it is for you to know the facts. How can you talk to your fellow prisoners without knowing some of the facts? So I sold more literature than anyone.
Every Saturday and Sunday you would go out with people for
not every Saturday and Sunday, but quite often I'd go out.
And you would go in your own neighborhood, or you would go...
No, I would go... I would go in... They didn't think it wise to go in my own neighborhood. Because we had some Catholic neighbors who said if they want to know how not to vote, they find out how they're voting. And they voted, I said. But although they liked us, they didn't like our politics. And they weren't going to vote for anything that would promote those politics. They were very honest about it. And they were my little daughter's closest friends.
Well, was it a policy then, it was in the party that you would not, that no one would go in their own neighborhood, everyone would go out of their neighborhood to sell?
No, I don't think it was that policy, but it was that policy because Dorothy, after all, was the secretary of the party then, and particularly in our neighborhood, because it was a Catholic neighborhood, and we were active, and it became more in our group than anywhere else.
So you would go into Walmart to sell then?
Yeah.
And you go door to door?
Yes. Well, I go door to door even in my own, clear down for, you see, I told you that time about the, at the forum that was held at that park, at Harvard Park, and that was only a few blocks from our house. I used to go around there all the time door to door. And I spoke to my neighbors. I didn't speak to them, you know, to try to convert them or anything. But I spoke to my neighbors because they all knew about us. The very fact that that Catholic family said they wanted to know, so they all knew what we were. So I speak, what is it you have against the communists? Why do you think that and everything? And then I would tell them, you know what communism is? Do you know what socialism is? Do you like what you're happening here? Now, some of them were such dedicated Catholics that they really were into thy hands, O Lord, I commend my being. Thy will, not mine, be done. Even though it be a cross that raises me, yet will I believe in thee. Nothing could shake them like the Harris family, the ones that were so close to Carol June and everything. Well, they were really... because I met Mrs. Hale at the market here, and she told me her husband had had a stroke. He was helpless. He was incontinent. That everything they had was drained away already and everything. And it was on the tips of my tongue to tell her, well, where is your God? You pray to him all the time. Why hasn't he helped you? I thought, what's the use of doing that now, you know? And his guy was really a mean old bastard. He was really anti-Semitic, and I once told him, Mr. Hill, don't forget that your Christ, it took the Jews to give you a savior. You couldn't produce one yourself.
Barbara, when you go out and sell the people's world, say during the war years and right after the war, when you go out for a Saturday or Sunday, how many would you usually sell?
Well, I don't remember ever selling more than 10.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more than most of them sold. And I tell them, this is a paper at least devoted to the workers' interest.
Mm-hmm.
So read what the workers are doing to upset this. We just went through a terrible war. You know what happened, why we had to go into it and everything. Now, if you want to continue those kind of things, if you want to know something about what is being done to have a system of society where you would have that, this paper at least will tell you more about it than any other paper, which was true. At that time, Al Richmond was the main writer, and since Al Richmond left, the paper hasn't been the same.
But so you would feel that it was a good day if you sold as many as 10, in other words.
Yes, I thought it was about, because, you know, you can't go into a person and talk to them 1 minute, allot yourself, say, now I will get allot 3 minutes for this one, 3 minutes for that one. You can't do that if you're just in the midst of explaining, you know, something, you know. Some people are more interested. But I never had anyone tell me, get out, get the hell out, you know. Mm-hmm. Never had anyone do that. If someone said, I don't agree, I said, all right, that's the view I don't agree. What is it you don't agree with? You know. See, I really never hurled any daggers at them either, you know. I was at the forums. I told you the head of the forums was very sympathetic. Mm-hmm. She wanted to join the party. I said, Alma, you'd only use your influence that you have in the forums where you select the, mm-hmm. and it wouldn't be any good, and you would be forever barred. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be accomplishing anything. And she became very mystic also, but she was a wonderful person.
Well, Barbara, when you go door to door and sell, how many, if you sold 10 papers, say, in the course of the day, how many households would you have gone to, though, usually, to sell those papers?
I think about 20.
Mm-hmm.
So half of See, half of the people, I'm only telling the 10 that I got paid for.
Right.
But if I found someone interested that they couldn't afford it, I really didn't get the paper.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, how about during the, first, right after the war, the party reorganized. What was your attitude and outlook at that time? Were you optimistic, or did you feel the party was beginning to lose its force in this country?
Right after, I didn't know enough yet of what was happening, but I never had that same faith in the Soviet Union when Stalin was killing all those people, because I knew they weren't guilty. I knew that they were not the traitors. I knew that they weren't. I didn't believe that at all. So I never felt that. So I can't say that I ever liked Stalin, but neither did I ever know that he was really such a devil as he really was.
Well, how about when the Progressive Party was organized and Wallace ran? Did you, what kind of attitudes and outlook did you have?
We supported it. We supported the Progressive Party. I went myself to a number of people to come to the meetings to hear what was said and everything. And the number of people, even some of my neighbors, came to have me in full sympathy with the Progressive Party.
Were you a delegate to any of the Progressive Party conventions?
Just one. And that time was when Sammy Aldi was there.
Mm.
And Sammy
Aldi. That's the one you told me about.
Yeah.
But did you see the Progressive Party as being
a stepping stone? Yes, I thought the Progressive Party might, but Dorothy said, look, you don't need two communist parties. All you're doing now is turning the Progressive Party into a communist stooge. That isn't going to work at all. The Communist Party speaks for the Communist Party, and the Progressive Party is not opposed to communism.
Oh, so Dorothy was opposed to
she wasn't opposed to the Progressive Party, but she said that if we claim for the Progressive Party something that isn't so, it isn't going to help any.
But this, it sort of represented a new popular front, didn't it, the Progressive Party?
That's what it was. That's why we supported it, the popular front, and at least it had equal time. And for the, that's right.
But you didn't see it as a whole new awakening of the party itself, then, in a regeneration?
No, I might have hoped it would be, but I had very dim hope, because I knew that you had to have strong convictions and everything, and in the Progressive Party they didn't, you know. So you were dealing with an unknown factor with the Communist Party. You were dealing with just knew exactly what they stood for. But in the Progressive Party, there was always a question mark that they would not go that far, and yet you felt it was very necessary to support it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a moderating thing, it was a hopeful thing, and you could approach people with that where you couldn't possibly without that. Therefore, it was important enough to develop it and see that some people were in it who would know how, yet again it comes directed. So there again it is.
I see.
There it is.
But many of you didn't actually join the Progressive Party, but you would work for it.
Yes, I think that I joined the Progressive Party. I don't remember that too well, you know, with some of the things.
Can you compare what would happen, for instance, when you would go to talk to someone about the Progressive Party and about Lois, compared to when you would go talk to them about the Communist Party and try to tell the people's world? What was the difference?
Well, I would tell them that Wallace, although he was a millionaire and everything, but it isn't necessary to be at poverty's edge to know the problems of the poor. He could have a humanity about him, and he did want certain things done. And the very fact that they opposed him for being vice president showed that the rich people feared him, because he knew their tricks. He was there and everything. And therefore, it's still a much more humane element. So we hope that he can help with that about.
And were they more responsive to that than when you talked about, say, when you told the people's world?
Yes. Yes. Now, I'll tell you another thing, you know. One of the things that in going around, when I spoke to some people, I had those, one of my neighbors lived down in Manchester, who the poor thing lost her mind, go with me, you know, because she believed in all of that, you know, and she thought if I had the guts to go. I said, it's just a question of guts. It just happens to be the question of facts. So when we went there, we pointed out what Dewey was. And I had people tell me right there, listen, Mrs. Nestor, I would vote for Wallace, but I don't want a Dewey in there, and therefore I will tell you, although I don't like Truman, I'm going to vote for him, because at least he's a Democrat, and with Dewey, you know, we know what he is. So they told me that in person, and we covered over 300 homes, and most of them, and I know that most of them, when they voted overwhelmingly for Truman, was more because they hated Dewey than because they liked Truman. But that's the reason that they wouldn't vote for the candidate for Wallace.
Would you think then that it was very bad timing when Wallace ran and the development of the Progressive Party at the time that it did develop?
Well, perhaps the timing wasn't the best. I think they should have had more time to examine the facts and to have a stronger appeal to them about this, that this was the greatest danger, and therefore both the districts have some unique features that the others don't have.
Mm.
I think that was a weakness in it.
But you weren't, you didn't expect a great deal, it doesn't sound like, of the Progressive Party, and you weren't too optimistic about its chances, it sounds like, were you?
Well, you see, I thought that those who were really, really wanted a change, they would come into the Communist Party. So it was only the weaker element that would still appeal, whether they were religious or whether they, you know, politically they weren't that strong, that they would prefer the Progressive Party to the Democratic or the Republican Party. But I thought that we didn't put in a strong enough factor in the Progressive Party to sway the people.
In other words, the Communist Party was not that committed to really making it more successful.
Well, I doubt that it was. I doubt that it was. I thought they were trying to in every way possible, because it was just like supporting the lesser of the two evils.
Because, well, Barbara, after the war, I mean, it seems that the war actually represented probably the peak of both power and general appeal of the Communist Party in this country, that after the war, it just went gradually to
yes, I, you know, it's true, though. It really is true. That's how what happened. Now, you see, the fight between Dowder and Foster didn't do the party any good either, you know, because a lot of dirty linen was washed in that process. And when you begin to doubt the purity of the contenders, you know, it's the moment of doubt sets in, you know, it goes deeper, you know.
Well, at that point, is it only in retrospect that you see the party losing the kind of force that it had? Or at the time, did you see it beginning to really lose the momentum it had over the...
Well, system? One thing I didn't like, that we had a kind of a worship of leaders, that we'd start a meeting, Willie is our leader, we shall not lead. You know, I hated that kind of a thing. I told you that time when Bill Schneiderman came to see Dorothy,
yeah.
And... he said something about the eye. Said Dorothy said, "Look out, Bill. My mother has no great appeal or something there. I think she used a stronger word than respect for leaders." She said, "You don't." I said, "Tell me, oh reverence." She said, "Tell me, Bill, why I should reverence you? If you do the job that they're supposed to do, I respect you. But why should I revere you? When the guys who went over Spain and were prepared to die to lay down their lives for these principles, I have all the reverence in the world for them, and I'll get up and salute them and share my last piece of bread with them. But I don't know why I should feel the same way about you." I said, "After all, you were comfortable in your bed and eating comfortably and sleeping comfortably. Bill, I don't believe in her reverence in leaders. Because leaders have often proved a very weak lead to lean upon."
So in other words, that on top of all of the events and the Duclos letter, and then the fight between Browder and Foster, when you hear Browder being so vivid, you see this as having really led to much of
I think it had a whole lot to do with it. Because they forgot, after all, the Communist Party in the 30s was a tremendous factor. It brought over 1 million people out on the street to protest against the thing. And I think they did some wonderful things. I think the Social Security that you have now with Medicare and everything were first fostered by the Communist Party. So I think the Communist Party did some very worthwhile things in the beginning. I think they opened many minds. Look, even at the universities, there were professors who were not only concerned with their jobs, but also with the social aspects of what was happening, who supported it. Professor Cannon, who stood out as a supporter of the communists, and Carlos Lamont, you know, and Frederick Field, related to the Rockefellers. But he came over supporting, he said, "I am supporting not my present, but my future in the because I really believe that the time for capitalism is
well, supported." Barbara, at the time itself, say in 46, 47, did you have any premonitions about the decline of the party, or is it only looking back now that you saw it?
I think it's only looking back now that I saw, but at the time I didn't see it, you know. You see, although it really came much more quickly than, but nevertheless, it was proceeding really more rapidly than we had any idea of, you know.
Well, now what about beginning in 49. Well, 48 is beginning what the Communist Party especially was defining as the road to fascism. And then in 49, when the 12 top people were arrested, what did you feel at the time, if you can recall, what was happening in the country? How did you feel about the fear of fascism?
I felt like that the Rosenberg case, the war in Korea and everything, I felt that the fascists were certainly in control. I really felt that there was a great danger of fascism here.
Now, what did you think that meant in terms of, well, for instance, you must have been fearful about Dorothy's safety.
Oh, yes, I was.
How did you feel about that?
You can't even imagine the anguish I felt if she came home late. If anything delayed and everything, whenever I heard an ambulance going by, whenever I heard a police car going by, I just died a thousand deaths. Yes, I did. And I told you that at the, on Western Avenue where we had that meeting place, there were six young guys had come in.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was the girly son was?
Now this was because of Elizabeth Gurley Clinton. They came in and they said, listening to you, Dorothy, you sounded very, very good.
Oh,
but
right.
Nevertheless, if our leaders told us that to kill you, we'd have no hesitation in killing you. She said, why would you want to kill me? What was there? I said, oh no, I have nothing in what you said. They agree with you what you said. Then why would you want to kill me? Because our leaders who know more than we do. The test of the witness.
Now, was this in the 40s or 50s? Was this the time of the Smith case?
Yeah, this was after the Smith.
Well,
right after.
Barbara, how would you compare? I mean, here you lived through the experience of the Palmer Raids and what happened in 1919, 1920. How would you compare the atmosphere and how you felt about things in, say, 1919, 1920 compared to 1949, 1950 with the beginning of the Smith Act?
Well, I began to feel as if it was the same things unrolling again by the same sinister forces and everything. But see, I've always felt that the military was the most important, the most sinister of all of the things. Because they dealt in human lives. Look, and they could always get us to find Congress to give them the funds to carry it on. Because I blame the Senate and House just as much as that. They couldn't carry on if they didn't vote the funds. And what have they done? And I think we have been very lax. See, one of the things that I think that Carol June does that is very, very good, they organized a letter-writing campaign that every year, I don't remember now whether once in 2 weeks or once in 1 week, that everyone writes to their congressman and senator telling them in no uncertain terms what, our eyes are upon you, this is what we want,
mm-hmm.
and we don't want you to vote funds for the military
mm-hmm.
and everything. So I think that's a very important matter. See, most people don't write to their senators and congressmen. I remember when Roosevelt told me himself, he says, you see, the ones who are opposed to what you and I stand for, they write. I can tell you a book full of letters I get from them because the virtues and all, they tell them to write, and they do it.
Right.
But people who feel like you and I do, he's a clever politician. So she wasn't that.
He wasn't like you and I.
No. And never see, but it's true. You don't. I would ask some of the people, did you write? Yes, I did. Well, I knew they were lying because there would have been some report of it.
Well, Barbara, in 49, did you see, in 1920, the Palmer Raids all happened very fast and they caught up a rather small network of people, but it effectively killed the radical movement of the day. Did you see 49, 50, what was happening as having, being more reflective of a complete fascist takeover than was true of 1919, 1920? How did you view what was going on?
I did view it as at least a try by the fascist forces to try to take over. You see, Medley Butler had written the book, you know, and they, by the way, see, the rest of his family were not like him. He said, if a recruiting officer came to my door and tried to recruit my son to go in, I'd shoot him like a dog and everything. Because I tell you, those thoughts were only one purpose, to be the agent to collect. So I worked in Nicaragua to collect for Wall Street. And in China, I collected for a different bank, the Chase National Bank and everything. So those, and see, I saved one, I had one copy left, and someone who was going to write a book wanted it and would surely bring back. You see, that's another thing, that you can't always trust people who then, everything. They never brought it back. But I had saved one thing that I have somewhere, I think Dorothy has the copy, by Jack London, who said, "Don't tell me that a soldier is a good. A soldier is a soulless, without any principle or direction, who would shoot even though it be his own father who would kill. So don't tell me a soldier is a fine or dedicated guy, dedicated only in destroying you, not in saving you."
Well, Barbara, it seems to me that you're saying that you saw the fascist trend in 49-50 being, in effect, the responsibility of the military.
Yeah, well, yes, there was Dulles and there was MacArthur working together before they went into Korea. And they were the two sinister figures there. Dulles was always, you know, that. The whole Dulles family, by the way, was a horrible family.
But you don't, that's not how you view what happened in 1919. You don't view 1919-1920 as being tied to the military, do you? Or not?
No, by the 1920 idea is the forces who try to suppress anything, you know.
Now, let me ask you this. If you thought that fascism was right around the corner, didn't you feel it would be better, say, in terms of Dorothy, for instance, and Dorothy's safety, for her to leave the country? Wouldn't it be worse in a fascist country for someone to be in prison? How did you feel?
I didn't think that prison was any shelter, because they could get even convicts there to carry out their things, you know, just like the Bob Thompson was struck and he died from the effects of what that the convict they had done. So I knew that if any time they wanted to get, Jackson was killed right in the prison. I didn't think that the prison offered a shelter.
But what did you think would be the best thing for Dorothy after the 12?
I didn't think that going in another country would be any safety for her, because I knew that those forces that were inimical to that would operate anywhere. They had long arms and they would reach in anywhere. And I thought she was still better off amongst her own right there here than against the unknown in the other countries.
So you didn't feel at any point that maybe it would be better for her to go to the Soviet Union, for instance, before her actual arrest?
No, because she would feel that they didn't need her in the Soviet Union. They already had socialism there. So she would feel then she would be living on what they had achieved, and she would have felt that was a terrible thing.
Because one of the things that I've often thought about was, if one really believed that we were on the eve of fascism.
Well, Ruth McKinney, do you remember? She and her husband, Bruce Minton, went to France because they thought that we were on the eve of fascism.
Because the party's analysis at that point was that Richmond talked about 5 minutes to midnight in his book. But did you feel that we were really that close to a fascist
society? Well, I felt that their power, in order to keep their power, they might strike at any time, you know, because they had means and everything. And the people were not alert. The people, it wasn't as if they were alert. Look in Ireland now. Those people, after all these years, certainly were alert of whatever was happening, but they were killing one another rather than killing the main enemy. Who are they killing now? They're killing one another on Anna, but they're not killing there. Are they hurting the royalty? Are they hurting the royal house? still call them the loyal opposition.
Well, so in other words, you really saw no alternative. The only thing one could do would be to wait, arrest, and then to fight it once it occurs.
Well,
the thing that I'm always struck by is if one really believes that we're that close to fascism, which I think the party did feel in 49, then it seems naive and inconsistent to think if you're that close to fascism that you can win your case in court.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't win their case in court. It was remarkable that the Supreme Court under Warren said that the Smith Act was unconstitutional. So the 11 in New York served their time, but they then went free. But when I saw what was happening in Judge Mathis's court, my Aunt Mathis was the fascist of the word go.
How did you feel? Was Dorothy arrested at home? Do you recall?
No, just as we turned the corner, Harvard,
mm-hmm.
She was arrested in her car.
Were you very certain it was coming by then?
Did I feel that the...
After the
12th? The guy who arrested her let her come home, though,
mm-hmm.
and see that Ricky was taken to the nursery school and everything. You see, all their minions are not with them altogether. As you know, I told you that when she was in jail there, and Vicky couldn't see her in the jail, or he could be at the trial and see her then, but not at the. And the guy who was the sheriff then, you know, big red-faced Irishman. I said, you know, what I've liked about you is I've always thought that you belong to the fighting Irish who fought for liberty and for justice. She says, well, De Gaulle and I am that now. I said, well, if you are, do you think it's right to keep a mother from seeing her son? Because do you feel that Dorothy is trying to destroy the country by force and violence? He says, no, I don't think so. I said, then why shouldn't you? He says, well, it's against that, and you know, you're risking, you damn rebel, you're risking my job. But there's a point there. He says, I can't help it if Dorothy has to go and get that pen and all that paper right over here for her. I'll see that she comes and gets it herself. I'm not going to take it to her. I'm not going to wait on her. So he goes and tells Dorothy, come there. And there she sees her son.
Now, Richard was, what, 15 by that time?
No, he was only 8.
Oh, that's right.
He was born in 43.
Yeah. Now, do you recall, you had to tell him then when she was arrested, I imagine, didn't you?
Did I have one?
You were the one to explain to him what happened.
Yes.
Well,
he said, you know what he said? He said, you know, if you guys haven't gotten a revolution yet, when I grow up, I'm going to be just like my mother and I'm going to fight capitalism. And he was 8 years old, because I hate her too. Young as he was.
Well, Barbara, did you foresee Dorothy being arrested? Were you prepared for it?
Well, yes, I was prepared for it because I knew that they wouldn't hesitate. After all, she was the chairman of the party.
What did you think was likely to happen then, given the situation?
You know, the funny thing is that when she told us the things that had happened with the inmates, a girl had been arrested. She was a prostitute. She says, but the one I'd like to get my hands on is that Dorothy Healy, you know. So someone reported that to Dorothy Healy, and she was also had been a beauty operator. And Dorothy's hair needed to see. So Dorothy said, would you do my hair, dear? Having been told that. And she was so aghast that she asked her. She says, yeah, sure I will. She said, so Dorothy, Dorothy said, tell me, why you would want to kill me? Why, what have I done to you? Or what have I done that you, Well, they say, she says, they say, but what you say, are you going to go by what they say? You go, well, why would you want to kill me? She says, well, damn it, I don't think I do. And she did a beautiful job on my hair and became my best friend.
Well, did you feel once Dorothy was arrested, were you optimistic about the case, or were you fairly certain that she was
going to
end up going to prison?
Yes, I'm afraid I had felt that she was going to go to prison. Yeah. That's why she sent her boy, you know, to go to New Mexico, that colony there that was, and I went with him, you know, I was there 3 weeks with him. And to Bruce Trennan's little girl, Elaine, that time, too, I took them both down. So they wouldn't be present when they arrested their mothers.
Oh.
Because Dorothy thought the shock of seeing the policeman come and arrest her here in her home would be a shattering thing for her child, and she didn't want him to see that.
Oh, so you were away when she was arrested?
I was in, yes, I was in New Mexico.
Oh, so she knew the arrest was just around the corner then?
Yes. Oh, yes, we knew it.
Now, how did you feel about, what did you see the alternatives of being? I mean, here, this is when the policy started of going into hiding and of a third of the leadership going underground. What did you think about all of that?
I thought it was stupid. I thought it was the most stupid thing I ever heard of. That even when they gave up, they lost $80,000 by... I said, how are they going to operate? By remote control? I said, now in this day of the pictures of the flashes of the news and everything and the pictures all over, every hamlet almost see it and knows it. How can you hide? You can't hide. And how can you separate a guy from all his interests, his family, all those? They'll be getting you the letters. And, you know, the post office has no scruples in watching any letter that comes and anything, and they'll pass master and think who is the one who wrote and everything. And so what are you going to do? It's so stupid that I can't imagine anything more stupid than that, to go away. All you put upon them is the burden of being caught. Now, it says, well, we don't put upon them the burden, Dorothy said. They chose it themselves. They voted. I said, of course they voted on it, because the whole party was geared that way. But it's so stupid, weren't they supposed to ask questions? And what am I supposed to do when I'm gone? How do I live? After all, if anyone was sending money and everything, that's a good way of placing them, like, too, isn't it? So, what are they going to do? I can't see. See, I who know just a fraction of what they know, but I have common sense, they don't have any.
Yes, Dorothy.
No.
Well, because it seems to me it's a difficult, it's a terrible dilemma to be in. On the one hand, if you think that fascism is at hand, you're not safe in prison in your own country. On the other hand, if you're outside the country, how can you fight it?
That's right. You can't fight it, and you wouldn't be any safer in any other country. You just wouldn't be, and you wouldn't be any safer in jail. I never felt that going to another country or being in jail offered any safety in any way, because I felt that a government so corrupt that they could do these things would put into office also those people who would carry it out.
Well, what did you think would happen to Dorothy then once she was arrested and went on trial?
I felt that the best thing that could happen to Dorothy was that if Dorothy were allowed to speak for herself, she could soon turn most of them, even the enemy, into friends at least that wouldn't attack her.
Do you think it was a mistake then to have put up Alida, what was her name?
Alida, yes, I know who you mean.
Do you think it was a mistake to have her as the spokesperson for the group? Wasn't she the main?
Yes, she was the main spokesman.
Uh-huh.
She was the authority on... Well, look, she left the party, so evidently something there that she didn't like, because she was a bright person, you know, and she was had a fatal illness.
Mm.
So I don't, it seems to me that with all their brilliance, they sometimes neglect, in their manner of presenting a thing, just the plain human mm-hmm. elements of it.
You think Dorothy might have done a better job than she?
I'm not sure, because Alita and Dorothy were almost of the same belief in many things.
Mm.
So I'm not sure, you know, that, because they could make mistakes too. Look, when Frank Spector, after the trial is over, and he tells this fascist judge, "You tried very hard to be fair." You know, I could have myself thrown something in his face. This, such a stupid thing to say, because it wasn't true. And I thought, Miss Todd, no wonder the Bible was written by some smart guys as well as by some, put not your faith in princes, put not your faith in leaders either. Always question.
Everybody.
That's right.